in association with Newsarama, welcome again to Word Balloon, the Comic Book Conversation Show. This is John Suntress. It's the end of the year, and before it ends, we've got another edition of the Bendis Tapes, the last Bendis Tapes for 2007. Brian Michael Bendis answering questions from his message board at jinxworld.com. We've trimmed some of the fat and gotten right to the meat, talking a lot about comic books and other writing plans that he has in the future. So I think you're going to enjoy this edition of the Bendis Tapes here on Word Balloon. This episode of Word Balloon is brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. InStock Trades offers a huge selection of trade paperbacks, hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at up to 35% off, with orders over $50 receiving free shipping. In fact, you can pick up the classic Avengers Disassembled hardcover that was just released in October. The regular price is $24.99. InStock Trades has it for $16.24. And don't forget to visit InStock Trades' sister site, Discount Comic Book Service at dcbservice.com for all your pre-order needs. Major publishers are 40% off, and monthly specials are 45 to 75% off. For more details, visit InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com and Discount Comic Book Service at dcbservice.com. Word Balloon is also brought to you by The Overman from Image Comics. Scott Reed and Shane White's new story, a 5-issue sci-fi noir story that follows hired killer Nathan Fisher as he fails to stop an apocalyptic union of mankind and machine. His discovery of a cryptic plot to change the face of evolution sends Nathan spiraling down a roller coaster of imminent destruction. Read what Broken Frontier calls a story that promises to be grand in scope. Mark Waid cites, "Riveting, I couldn't put it down." And Ain't It Cool News says this is truly a memorable and impressive debut series worth checking out. That's The Overman from Image Comics. For more information, check out their website, theovermancomic.com. We start things off with this edition of the Bendis Tapes with a series of technical writing questions from another writer.
We're opening with a bonus. We could close with the bonus, but we're going to open with the bonus. Now, how did these questions come to you? These are questions from the Nightly News' Jonathan Hickman.
That is correct. He is, of course, a Bendis board member, and I think has enjoyed when we get very technical and you get writers' questions from the Bendis board. I think they're very interesting.
We're opening with a guest star questions.
Yeah, and I think they'll be very...
rising star Jonathan Hickman.
Exactly. So I think they are kind of interesting. And
we should be writing a S.H.I.E.L.D. book for Marvel.
That would be good.
Yeah.
Pax Romana, end of the month. Will be out this week, his new book.
Cool.
So, first of all, he'd like to know, tell me your take on the difference between the use of double dashes and ellipses.
I'm not actually a fan of double dashes. I'm a fan of the single dash, but I'm sometimes overruled by the copy editors at Marvel who are right that the double dash is a more appropriate use. I use the single dash as when a sentence is being interrupted. And an ellipse when a thought or a sentence is kind of trailing off, like, you know, you kind of don't finish your sentence, you kind of just hang there, like you're about to let it hang there. To me, one is an abrupt stop of a sentence, and one is a trailing off of a sentence.
Rather than the double dash, I'm trying to understand.
It depends. You know, like sometimes you just go...
Or you're about to set up a flashback, well, you know.
Yeah, I just did one where an ellipse, where I would just use an ellipse right.
I see. Okay. Also regarding text, this is good. Give us your take on emphasis. Why do you bold or italicize whatever? Should it be used rarely, or are you in the camp of doing nothing as to leave the interpretation solely up to the reader?
That, you know, it's funny because I enjoy the emphasis of the words. Again, that's something that in the past I may have overdone a little bit, and I try to, like, use it depending on the character's voice. Some voices are much more commanding and less inflective, where like someone like Peter Parker would inflect certain words just from his comic timing. He would push a certain word. And so I think that comics allow you to control the acting of the line a little more than you would in regular narrative or in screenplay form. So go ahead and do it, and especially... when you're trying to, you know, differentiate voice of character between certain characters, it certainly is, you know, a lovely thing that you can do. I do a read of the script specifically to see if anything needs to be bolded, and that's I do a lot of that in lettering form once I've seen it lettered.
Mm-hmm.
There was one time years ago, my first year at Marvel, where a letterer, and I actually forget who did it, decided on his own to punch every fifth word. no matter what was going on.
Okay.
He'd be like, you have to stop going to the party, you know, that kind of thing. And I lost my shit, like I was going to quit comics. Nobody noticed it, but it upset me profoundly. That was like being rewritten. That's the closest I've ever gotten to, like, being rewritten.
Okay.
And, yeah, I take that pretty seriously, but you kind of got to feel it. And Jonathan uses a lot of, what's the word?
Or italicized?
Not standardized fonts. So I might not use them in that instance. But for, like, and I remember Sandwich Witch underlined bolded words instead of bolding them, and that didn't work either. So it's a very unique thing to comics.
Are there any?
You've got to feel it, man.
Are there any words you wouldn't use?
Are there any words in the English language that
yes.
I wouldn't use?
Yes.
No.
Okay. I feel like I've got a pretty good grasp on how to plan and execute a finite story. Where I feel like I'm really lacking is in the area of evolving characterization. My question is, did Powers and Sam and Twitch make you a better writer because of the format change to ongoing as opposed to finite? Are there things it's going to be impossible for me to pick up until I'm working in an ongoing format?
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of things that you're going to pick up, but what you're in a place for now is something that you'll find that even if you get like a lifetime contract and unlimited budgets, John, you're the kind of writer who writes as if this is the last book you're ever going to get to write. And you tend to always have that in you. There's someone I know who completely fucked up something and did it on purpose that works for Mainstream Comics. And it floored me that he did this. And he did it to like prove a point. And it floored me. And I really am filled with that thing that if that ever happened to me, I would be fired immediately, even if with my pretty decent track record. That if I blew an issue of New Avengers, that would be my last issue of New Avengers.
Okay.
And I really wholeheartedly believe that. And so I believe that most decent writers, decent to outstanding writers, have that in them. And no matter if you're on ongoing or not, you'll write it that way. But on the other hand, knowing that you're on an ongoing, this certainly allows you opportunity for character development that is just, you know, outside of, you know, weekly dramas or novel series. There's no other way you're going to be able to, you know, get into the heads of certain characters. And I think about, like, the arc of Dina Pilgrim, and I think that you could only really do that if you really, you know, got to spend that much time with the character. You couldn't just jump to it. You have to set the standard and then break it. And you need a lot of issues to do that. So you'll find it, man. But I did 10 years of miniseries before I ever did it. So, you know, so I certainly understand where he's coming from.
Fair enough. All right, we move on to the questions from the board. And,
thank you, Jonathan Hickman. I look forward to you stealing one of my jobs one day.
Okay, Casale. Is there going to be an Ultimate Trapster?
No. Maybe. No, actually, maybe.
In all seriousness, do you know what cons you'll be attending in 08? If any, my Alias Omnibus and Powers hardcover are itching for some custom swearing.
I actually don't. There's a very good chance I'll be at Emerald City Con. There's a very, very good chance I'll be at Stumptown. I'll be the first mainstream guest Stumptown here in Portland has ever had. I have been invited to other conventions. I think it may be mandatory for me to show up to San Diego for a day. But other than that, it's just a year where I just can't commit to a lot of stuff, especially with the writer's strike on. It may be over in February, and then I'm really going to have to buckle down because I've signed on to do two major pieces of work in Hollywood that I've already been paid for that I can't do until the strike's over.
Wow.
So I'm using that time to just do my comics, but once it's over, I really have to buckle down and do my work.
Can you tell us what projects, or you're not allowed to say?
You know, I actually don't know why I'm not allowed to, but I'm going to respect someone and not say.
They're okay.
Both non-comic book related, and as soon as I'm actually writing them, I guess I'll say what they are. It's a go done deal.
Excellent. The Bendis Seymour Butts collaboration is finally coming to fruition.
Oh, that we knew about, though. Oh, that's
right.
Not a secret.
Okay.
I've tattooed Seymour Butts on my ass.
With the writer's strike impact.
By the way, just admitting I know way too much about porn.
Well.
Just knowing that.
Who asked you the question? Thank you.
At least your class has that on her ass.
With the writer's strike impact on broadcast TV, what are you going to do with the time you would normally have spent watching TV?
Well, the really, it's been a big shock to me how little actual television I watch that's not on DVD. So it hasn't really affected my life in a big way, other than Daily Show, maybe. My wife is close to, you know, some kind of breakdown, but
I can appreciate
she's also
that.
Asking me for more DVDs than she ever has, so.
I think
she's rewatching all 10 seasons of Stargate, SGI, or whatever.
Any announcements on a new or regular artist on Mighty Avengers, or will it just be rotating artists to fit the story?
It's going to be rotating artists for the duration of Secret Invasion, just because of the nature of the storytelling. It certainly gets us higher quality artists who can only do an issue or two, and that is the nature of both series for a while.
Okay.
After that, there will be a regular artist on New Avengers and a surprising announcement about Mighty Avengers.
All right. Marco 19. Mm-hmm. Bendis, love these word balloon podcasts. Thank you. What's next for the Illuminati? Hopefully another limited series or such, as I would imagine the stories you can do set in the past are endless.
Illuminati will be a big part of Secret Invasion and post-Secret Invasion. That's all I can say for now.
Will Ultimate Spidey reflect what's going on in Loeb's Ultimates, and will Spidey be participating in the big Ultimatum event in 2008 or 9?
Yes, and I think there's some sort of participation.
Okay. Will Secret Invasion...
Unlike myself, Mr. Loeb hasn't really committed a lot to the actual written page yet. So.
Little dig, Jeff. How you doing?
That was my big dangler when we were arguing at the retreat last week.
Oh.
I go, why would he wrote it?
Will Secret Invasion involve the X-Men and any of their characters in any way?
Yes.
Any plans to work with either Chris Bachalo, John Cassaday, or Mike Choi?
I would work with all three of those people gleefully.
Bendis, you, and meaning lineal you, Uncanny X-Men, hopefully one day?
I could see that. There's absolutely zero plans right now.
From Icarus, do you have any plans to revisit the Ultimate X-Men? Really, man, your run was pretty awesome, and the book is aching for an adrenaline shot.
Yeah, you'll see them, thank you, and you'll see them soon. They're part of the Amazing Friends arc with the debut of Ultimate Firestar. And the Ultimate X-Men guest star.
Very
and
cool.
So does Magneto, as we've already seen in the covers that have been solicited.
Pat Loika, first of all, I want to thank you guys for doing the podcast. It never fails to entertain. Wait till we get done. Also want to mention how much I've loved Powers number 26 and especially 27.
Well, thank you, Sunshine.
Now some questions. The two Skrull reveals have obviously shaken things up in the Marvel Universe. With that in mind, will we see a follow-up on the Hand in the aftermath of their leader's demise? And what of the Inhumans, an Infinity Gem that Black Bolt possesses?
All of which will be dealt with. This is just a teeny tiny bit of the fun that's coming.
Am I correct in assuming that the new Masters of Evil you were creating was in fact the Hood's group of villains?
Nope. What? There's more coming? Yes.
I had reread all of your Avengers books from Disassembled, and a lot of things stood out. The Skrull in Disassembled, the person that hires Electro, the Vibranian mining...
Mm-hmm.
Doctor Strange's power levels,
mm-hmm.
and the they that Stark has referred to in Mighty Avengers number one. I'm sure all this is connected, am I right?
Yes.
Will you be getting a chance to write more of Magneto? I love the way you portrayed him in House of M and in the collective arcs. And he'd be an
Did
interesting...
Did you say the word Magneto in a Sammy Davis Jr. voice? Is that what that was?
That was half Sammy, half Patrick Stewart. Magneto. Okay. Hey, man, Magneto. I like that. And he'd be an interesting foe to any of the Avenger teams.
I'm a big Magneto fan because he's, I think, the archetypal villain for Marvel in, as I said in another podcast, in that his argument for what he wants is clear and could be argued. And I find that fascinating. You know,
sure.
He isn't a wah-ha-ha villain. When he's written well, he's written as a person that knows what he wants, is willing to do anything to get it. So, yes, I will come back to him someday.
Do you like Ian McKellen's Magneto?
Mm,
yeah. I'm just throwing that in there.
Thank you.
I'm not. I'm just asking because I do too. I think it's slightly different.
I like Ian McKellen's Magneto.
I do too.
No, I was thinking when we were in New York.
Yes.
Some big name dropping. You ready?
I wanted to talk about it. So by all means, go ahead.
Okay. So in New York, we did our big retreat, and on Tuesday night, Ed Brubaker, myself, and Matt Fraction invited to be guests on this thing called the Comic Book Club.
Yes.
Which is kind of what your podcast would be, but in front of people.
A live show.
Recorded.
Yes.
And somehow Bill Hader from Saturday Night Live and Superbad fame tagged along, and I was invited as well. And then he brought Seth Meyers, who is the head writer on Saturday Night Live and still holds what I consider to be the greatest appearance in Celebrity Poker Showdown on Bravo 2 years ago. And so they came out with us, and Seth Meyers, and they were asked about, you know, if you guys are such nerds, and it seems that they indeed are, why don't you do more comic book related material on the show? And Seth Meyers told the story how he had written that sketch where Ian McKellen hosted, where Ian McKellen was just playing some guy who lived near the comic store who could do an awesome impersonation of Gandalf, but a really bad Magneto. And that is like the biggest, one of the biggest laughs he ever got, and he was so thrilled that that got on, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he did the same sketch again with Kristen Dunst, and it died in rehearsal. Like, it's a dead silence, like he wanted to break the sketch and apologize to the audience.
Wow.
For even trying it. So he's been a little gun-shy about doing more nerd material.
Yeah, so Lord's like, let's put that to rest for a while. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Ryudo, what is the next Marvel movie that's not in production that you're excited to see?
It's not in production?
What's been greenlit, I guess.
Is, but I'd like to see that.
Okay.
For numerous reasons.
Okay.
But I don't know. I don't know where it's at in the screenplay situation.
And finally, how long really are you going to be on Ultimate Spidey?
It came up again at the retreat. I did say, should I leave? And, you know, no one but Tom Brevoort wants me to leave the book. And Tom Brevoort only wants me to leave the book. That means more Avengers scripts for him, and that's all he cares about.
The Todd, how have you enjoyed working with Stuart Immonen this far in Ultimate Spider-Man, thus far? And how has the transition from Mark Bagley been script-wise?
Oh, yeah, he's been amazing, and I constantly tell him what I love about him is, like Bagley, he hands in a page about every day. So there's this constant influx. You know, some guys wait a week or two and then hand in their work.
Okay.
There's this constant influx of material from him, and I feel a very strong sense that the last few issues were really written for him. You know, very clearly.
Sure.
He doesn't need much collaboration. He doesn't, you know what I mean? Like, some guys need to be on the phone every day.
Okay.
He doesn't seem to want to do that at all. So I'm just writing for him and being a fan. But he's been amazing.
Viva Shazbot, would you continue Powers beyond the death of Dina or Christian?
Yes. I might have already.
Ooh.
What?
Mm-hmm. Are we going to see Thor, or even better, Thor versus Sentry, in the pages of Mighty Avengers at any point soon?
Yes.
How long before we get to find out what Ultimate Spider-Woman has been up to?
This year. I've had that story actually plotted out, and I've already written some scenes. It was going to be part of an annual that didn't happen, so it's definitely going to make its way into something. I have a very unique thing to do there.
What's it going to take from us to get you to write even in just a throwaway line about Ultimate Carol Danvers and Ultimate Sharon Carter being in a same-sex relationship over in Ultimate Spider-Man?
$10,000.
All right, there you go. Zombie Master Funk, if Marvel got the G.I. Joe license, would you be interested in writing it?
Nope.
Powerbomb 1411, I'm trying to get more active on your board, and honestly, signing my stuff in Tacoma gave me lots of encouragement.
Yeah, he was a cool guy. Thanks, man.
Very cool. Any plans to come to his town, his state, Michigan? His town, Michigan.
No, I've been to Michigan numerous times. I don't know why I would go back unless there was a kidnapping. I'm not asking you to be kidnapped, by the way.
What do you think of these TV shows? The Dead Zone, The 4400, Psych, and Burn Notice.
Canceled, haven't seen it.
Got to tell you, Burn Notice is really fucking awesome.
Yeah, I heard it was good. I'll probably pick it up on DVD.
Spider-Man 3: The Game. We know the movie was bad due to a number of reasons, although I did laugh when Toby tried to cry on the bridge. But for $20, is the game worth my time? I really hate time missions. Going up against Johnny Storm the second time in Ultimate Spider-Man made me put the game down for good. I failed miserably twice, and that was with a strategy guide.
So. I think you're asking a lot of questions about yourself there, young man. It's more about your abilities than it is about storytelling, but okay.
What about Assassin's Creed? Is that worth my time? Actually, by the time this question is answered, I might already own it, but you can still answer. Looks pretty cool.
I own it, too, but I haven't cracked it because I'm not done with Call of Duty yet.
Those trailers look pretty goddamn cool, I got to say.
Yeah, no, Brubaker liked it a lot.
I'm sure this podcast will be just as great as the others. I've always enjoyed listening to them. I just wish they were longer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Live from the ICU.
They need to be longer.
Yeah, Bendis and I are... Yeah. All right, here's another question. The Gibson, how long before your daughter writes her first comic book?
She already has.
What is it?
She made a little comic book at school. I thought it was the cutest thing.
What was it about?
It was about a princess.
Okay. That's all.
She said there's not enough comics for girls, and she made a comic book about a princess.
Very nice. Jim T., will there be some kind of master list of Squirrel clues at some point? Clearly your books have been dropping hints since Disassembled, and I suspect other writers have been doing the same. It'd be cool to see them all in one place.
Well, we're going to rewind the clock on a lot of stuff and just flat out show them to you. So instead of a cold checklist or anything, we're going to unveil them in a dramatic interpretation.
Nick Maynard, 85, as it is with every medium, there are things that can only be done in a comic book, things that can't be translated into other mediums without losing something significant in the translation. I think that you take advantage of these things better than maybe any other current comic creator in your writing and especially
not
in your art.
But thank you.
I was hoping...
Brian Vaughn actually does it better than anybody.
All right. I was hoping you would talk for a minute about some of the things unique to comics and comic book storytelling that you find most exciting.
Well, you know, some of them you can't even put into words. There really is the unique relationship between a comic book reader and a comic book itself is very, very special. And even people say, well, just so you can watch a movie at home. And I'm like, but no, you know what? The movie still has almost a total control over time and space, whereas the reader has a lot of control over time and space and voice of character that's different even from how a novel is read. And I find that to be fascinating because it's so ethereal, it's so magical, and you try to make it work for you every single time, but it's nearly impossible to do every single time. So the space in between the panels is all space you don't have any control over. Even if you move it around or control the shape of it, it's still the reader's control. That's where they interpret time and space. So all that stuff is very, very fascinating to me. There's also the language, the inherent language of a comic book. We were talking earlier about bolded words and stuff. There's certain things that you comic books are allowed to do that, you know, it's funny. I almost got to it before, but when you're writing a screenplay, the one thing I really miss about writing a screenplay is bolding the words you want it bolded. Just to inflect the act in a certain way, but you're not allowed to do that, and I do miss it when I'm not doing it. Not as a crutch, but genuinely I would love to express my idea fully, but it's not only my idea to express. There's 60 other people that would, you know, in theory, touch a script.
That's interesting. I didn't know
their way.
I didn't know you couldn't do that. That's very interesting.
You could do it, like, twice, maybe, but anything past that is considered...
Stepping out of other people's...
You're telling everyone you don't know how to write a script.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. But on the other hand, you should be able to write your script without them. You should be able to inflect your writing without any tweaks like that.
By Nick's count, you're working with 13 artists right now.
Wow.
How is that even possible?
How is that possible?
Well, he's got a list. Lenil Yu, Frank Cho, Mark Bagley, Carlos Pagulayan, Michael Gatos, David Mack, Bill Sienkiewicz, Klaus Janson, Alex Maleev, Jim Chung,
wow,
Oming, Eminem,
yeah,
and the new Mighty's Avengers artist that'll be on after Bagley.
Well, you know, that's close. I'm done with Cho for a while, and I'll get to the Avengers annual soon. But at the moment, we're not working together, and the Carlos finished his annual a while ago, so I'm not really. Though you haven't seen it yet, I'm not working with him anymore. So all those other people, yeah, right now I'm working with them right now.
Well, he wants to know, how is it possible? Are you emailed each page individually? Do they pile up and you get several at a time? You just mentioned how Stuart does it. Do the artists send them in to you? Do the editors? Essentially, he'd like to hear about what it's like to get the new art for your comics. And also, will we get a chance to see Angel Medina's Mighty Avengers pages or Adi Granoff's new Avengers pages?
Well, first of all, yeah, most artists hand their stuff directly to the editor because he pays them. So, and then the editor's job is to funnel it out. A lot of guys I have a personal relationship with, so they usually CC me or send it to me separately or before them just to see what I thought. But most send it right to the editor because they want to get paid as soon as possible, which is totally understandable.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but that is by far the best part of the job. It never gets old. It is a completely addictive part of the writing process is waking up. Particularly Monday morning, you get a lot of art. You wake up Monday, there's a good six or seven emails just filled with, you know, zip files full of art. And it's a thrilling experience. Never gets old.
Any chance we can hear about Marvel
Project? As far as those other artists' work.
Angel and Adi's pages, are we going to get a chance to see
those?
Yeah,
the Adi stuff's a good 3 years old already. I don't think so. There's only two pages. Angels, I don't know. I don't think so.
Okay.
And not that I'm holding them back. I mean, I don't know what the purpose would be.
All right.
I guess it's up to them at this point.
Any chance we can hear about any Marvel projects you were attached to that almost happened but fell through for whatever reasons?
Marvel comics that I was attached to that didn't happen. Well, I've told the story about Nick Fury. That was my first one that never happened. And Spider-Woman, I've told.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those have happened in other podcasts.
Yeah, those are the two big ones I think about a lot. And trying to think about what I attach myself to.
Nothing else recent?
I pretty much tend to do what I say I'm going to do. There hasn't been really any extenuating circumstances that had me do. I was going to do these Ultimate Universe annuals last year that never happened because of Ultimatum. And I did Ultimate Origin instead. Like the time I was going to spend to do those annuals.
Okay.
Like the Ultimate Origin, but all that material will find its way into the Ultimate Universe eventually. Like I mentioned about Spider-Woman before. So a lot of involves some new characters, some new villains, and some new hookups and stuff, but all that stuff will make its way. So.
And the recent...
Some of my friends laugh at me. When I come up with an idea, even if the project doesn't happen, I find a way to get that idea in somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't let anything go.
Nick wants to hear about your thoughts on Marvel's Digital Comics Unlimited, both from the fan-consumer point of view and also the creator-business point of view, especially in how it compares to the situation with the writer's strike or Writers Guild of America.
I don't know how it compares because they haven't settled on how they're going to pay us, but I know that they're working on it right now. In fact, I know very clearly that they're working on it right now because I was just there.
Okay.
I'm also getting access to it, but I haven't seen it yet. I've only seen a sample of it from a few months ago, so I can't speak to it in great length. I haven't, but I am a big fan of it in theory, and I am because we've done something very similar with our Daily Powers reprint that we've done for free on Newsarama for the last couple of years, thanks to Tim Daniels. And so I'm a big fan. I say if you've got the goods, put it online, man. Show it off. Don't hold back. Don't be coy or casual about it. Ultimate Spider-Man's been available as a digital comic almost since its inception, and it is not to be braggy, but it is by far one of the most best-selling mainstream graphic novels of the last 10 years, as far as I was told by Marvel.
Yes.
So I think that the digital reproduction of it or its availability online as a sample definitely helps the trade paperback sales. So, and I know for a fact the Powers Daily helped the Powers trade paperback sales. So I'm a big fan of it. I don't like marketing where you're trying to hide your product. It makes me think that you think it sucks. If you never see a movie come out and you don't get to see anything.
Yeah, clearly.
They know it sucks.
Right. They don't show it for the critics
or
whatever.
If you got the goods, show it, man.
Sure.
Like when they put that Charlie Wilson put out 8 minutes of the movie, that means they know the movie's good.
Yeah, I remember when they did it with The Cooler, and a lot of films are doing that now, and I think that's smart.
Yeah, the movies that have got something to show you, yeah.
Juggernaut asks, Quicksilver seems to be one with a lot of potential, and given his current abilities, which seem to coincide with those of DC Zoom, Hunter Zolomon, he deals with temporal speed. Would he be someone that could be a
Thank
global
you for
threat?
Hunter Zolomon.
Well, I was doing that for the non-DC fans that might be listening. would he be someone that could be a global threat that the Mighty Avengers would have to deal with?
Quicksilver was a big topic of discussion at the last retreat, I will tell you that. In fact, a vote was put to the future of Quicksilver as a character, because it was so heated. So I believe you will be seeing some Quicksilver in the near future.
Will there be any new characters joining the Mighty Avengers roster?
Comings and goings, yes.
Now with Troy not on art chores, will Wonder Man finally be freed from that horrendous safari jacket look?
Hell yes.
I love the safari jacket. And will his ionic energy look ever be back?
See how the world treats it.
Now with Troy not on art chores... Oh, that's, I just read that one. Will Ares be gaining any kind of godly made weapons from Hephaestus, like a blessed sword, shield, and gauntlets? I'm Greek and I don't even know how to say it.
Ares can get a lot of face time. The other thing with Ares that I would battle Frank Cho about, but that I'm a little freed up to do now, is I believe that Ares would pick up any weapon he wanted and blast away, you know?
Sure.
Frank was under the feeling that he would only pick up a battle axe like Thor would pick up a hammer, and I'm like, yeah, but he's not Thor, he's the god of war, and anything he could throw at you, he would throw at you. Guns, tanks,
sure,
bazookas, anything, so.
What villains are you planning to use at some point for the Mighty Avengers to tangle with, and will you create any new villains for them?
Yes and yes, but what villains, well, you're going to see the cast of the Hood's crew is going to get much larger as time goes on, as he amasses his wealth and power.
Very cool. That's been great, by the way. I've enjoyed the story so far. Will the Mighty Avengers clash with the Red Hulk?
Don't know. Got to see an issue first.
Will Strange, having used...
Who is the Red Hulk? Maybe the Mighty Avengers are the Red Hulk.
All thrown together.
Can you hear that noise?
I can.
That is my dog, Lucky, chewing on my dog Schroeder's head right under her feet.
Aww.
Lucky. I'm on the radio. Cut it out. It's very unprofessional.
Hi, Lucky. Lastly, will Strange, having used Zom's essence to give himself a power boost in World War Hulk, be now a new danger for him in that he can be possessed by Zom at any time and become a universal threat?
Is that Greg Pak asking this? you will find out in Avengers Annual number 2.
Very good. Greg Donovan, are you pleased with how the thought balloons in Mighty Avengers have been working out?
Yes. As happy as I can be about anything in my miserable life.
Here's one from the Doctor. Can a Watchmen movie work?
Yes.
I think so, too. Will there be any other names considered for Ultimate Spider-Man art chores besides Stewart?
Not right now. No, he's moving right along.
Oh, were there?
Don't know.
Past tense. Excuse me.
It looks like he's in for the haul.
I'm sorry. I got the tense wrong. That was past tense. Were there any other names considered?
Oh, were there any?
Yes.
There was, it's a, pretty, not, again, this all sounds very self-serving, but it's a pretty, pretty heady gig for Marvel to hand out to someone. Not only, it's a pretty mainstay book, and what you don't want is do 110 solid issues, and then 5 issues by new guy, and then a fill-in. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You want a guy who can really do it. So that became not only does it have to be someone really special, but not a Bagley clone, and someone who could do the work. So the list was there, and the list got smaller and smaller, and then Stewart's name came up, and it was like, oh, you know when you hear it. And you go, Stewart. And that was it.
Very cool. When can I have my Powers Volume 2 hardcover?
It's being worked on right now, thanks to the amazing C.B. Sobolski and Jen Grunwald and everybody else over there.
Can you give us something juicy that we may not have heard yet? Nothing spoilery, just something to keep an eye on, or a phrase or whatever.
A phrase?
Yeah.
So you haven't heard bamboo. Not said.
Is there something you've written that makes you wake up in a cold sweat in the middle of the night and think, my God, what was I on?
Yeah, it usually involves the word Zorn.
Whip, is there a character in the Marvel Universe that you want to kill off but can't because of the brass? If so, whom?
Spider-Man.
No, you don't.
Well, I want to do it in Powers.
Oh, that's
a crossover.
There you go. No, nobody?
Do I want to kill off?
Yeah.
No, not really.
All right. Rick America. Hi, John and Brian. A couple questions. Is there a target date for the Bendis Mac Last Daredevil story yet?
No, there's not, and it's being delayed even as we speak because of Matt got another cool gig after New Avengers as well, and Claus is working on something, so it's being done on the weekends. So it's a little slow going on that one, but it'll come.
Okay, more delays.
I've seen pages. They're gorgeous. They're stunning.
Okay. What about the Bendis Malieve Spider-Woman?
Day after Secret Invasion is over.
When everything is done and wrapped up in Secret Invasions, any chance of a director's cut with all the Easter eggs and a timeline of clues dating back to Illuminati? You said you're going to revisit those scenes.
Yeah, and if it's successful, I'm sure a bone picking like Civil War Chronicles will occur.
Any progress on other new artists to work with? And actually, it sounds like a classic list that he's going from, like Steranko, John Byrne, or Gene Colan.
Well, Steranko, I happen to know, has got something cooking that I'm very excited about, but I think it's a secret. John Byrne refuses to acknowledge that we exist, and Gene Colan I have no contact with, but I did get to do that one panel with him once.
Let's see. He thinks someone in power should be a Skrull, too.
That would be cool.
That'd be funny.
And then Marvel would own powers. That would be sad.
And that would not be cool. Matt O., I have to ask, have you watched Friday Night Lights yet? I think you'd love it.
I have not, but maybe one day.
What's your view on decompression in comics? This could be the most expensive medium out there, since it seems like three-quarters of the $3 books coming out of the mainstream publishers can be read in less than 10 minutes. What would be your response to those who say some are too quick a read to be worth the cash?
I don't really believe in it. I don't think it exists on the level that it's expressed upon online. I don't sit around and think of, okay, here's my scene. How can I decompress it? That would be me being a decompressionist. Like, I'm purposely looking to decompress a scene. In fact, in my mind, quite often the opposite is happening, where I think I'm cramming tons of stuff into an issue that it's too crammed, only to hear that the response to it is it's decompressed. So I may be not the guy to answer this. I will say that the language of comics has dramatically changed over the years, particularly over the last 10 years, where clunky exposition has been replaced by a more fluid visual narrative by guys like Warren Ellis and, you know, others. And I think that some people who were raised on the clunky exposition, and it was clunky, go back and reread it, it was pretty clunky, are getting used to like a different level of reading. And though you could easily read it in 10 minutes, you could easily read those old comics in 10 minutes as well by skipping over the clunky exposition and just reading the word balloons and have the exact same experience. So I think that most comics worth their money, it doesn't matter how long it takes to read them, it matters the value and the quality in which they're being presented. So that's what I think. But I don't think it takes 10 minutes to read one of my books. But you never know.
What are your top five favorite TV shows currently on the air?
Top five shows currently on the air.
Yes, Casey, let's go.
Well, definitely 30 Rock.
Okay.
And The Office.
Okay. Two.
Curb.
Ended well. Just saw the last one.
Yeah, phenomenal. Phenomenal ending to that season. Curb was amazing this season.
Yes, it was. Super Dave was
Dick
awesome.
Is Dick Van Dyke still on the air?
Sadly, no. Not even Diagnosis Murder is still on the air.
And Gilmore Girls gone.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm not watching a lot of TV, guys.
You're not Battlestar Galactica?
I would recommend.
Not Battlestar? I know that's one of your favorites.
Yeah, it's like miniseries. It hasn't been on the air in 2 years.
No, that's not true. It was on last spring.
Oh, I liked Razor. Razor was good.
Razor was awesome. Razor was fantastic. Yeah, no, I think Battlestar counts. It's still got one more season.
Studio 60 still on the air?
Sadly, no.
Okay.
That's four, pal. Yeah, that's it?
Deadwood?
Deadwood, I don't think it did get renewed. No.
How about W Carapine Cincinnati? Is that on the air?
Yeah.
I bought the box set of Dr. Katz.
Big fan of Jonathan Katz has been podcasting. He's got like...
Has he really? I'll listen to that.
Yeah, I think he has a health issue that's keeping him from touring more. And I know he's been doing podcasting and stuff, and I think that's very cool. Because I like him a lot. I think he's very funny.
Oh, you know what I like? I like At the Movies with Ebert and not Ebert.
And Roper.
And Roper.
Okay. All right. There's five.
Enjoy that show.
All right. I know you have no plans to write a full-length novel, but there is a chance at some is there a chance at some form of prose from you in the future?
Yeah, no, I'm not against it at all. I read Warren's book and I went, oh, I could do that. No, I I do enjoy it. I've been reading a lot of novels last couple months. I've been doing a lot of nonfiction reading, and yeah, sure.
Okay.
Read Steve Martin's book, enjoyed the shit out of it.
You know, is it good? Because I just read a positive review.
You would
review.
Love it. You would love it, love it, love it.
I was reading what Mark Vanier said on his blog about it, too. And, all right, good, good to know. Very good to know.
Yeah, it's excellent. And I read it before he did. And I read Clapton's book, and I enjoyed that. And, I'm reading Nick Hornsby's new book. And
Oh, that's cool. I'm always a fan.
Good stuff.
Ever read anything?
Sometimes you don't need the pictures.
Hell no.
Get rid of these artists. I can really get a career going.
Have you read anything by Kenneth Opel? I'm a big fan of his as of late. He wrote Airborne and the Silverwing series.
I have not read him.
Me neither. Okay, let's move on. Let's see. Bronx Ronan. Brian, did you check out The Mist and Scanner Darkly? And are you?
I have not seen The Mist, and the ending's been ruined for me, so I probably will not get to it till it hits cable. Scanner Dark, I'm a big Soul K. Dick fan, and I am a big Linklater fan, and I found Scanner Darkly to be quite amazing.
Me too. Loved it.
I loved almost every second of it, and I've watched it numerous times, and it only gets better.
I'm a big fan. Are you going to check out I Am Legend?
My wife saw it and loved it. I will check it out when I check it out.
All right, Norton, I just talked to Mike Norton tonight, and he hated it, and enough of my friends didn't like it, so I don't want to see it.
Yeah, I'm not in a hurry. There's a lot of good movies out there. I'm not in a hurry. National Treasure 2 is out.
Well, like I said, I saw Charlie Wilson's War, and I...
I got to see that. I'm going to see that this week.
Lift Toner. Hey, Brian and John, thanks for doing these. Short and sweet. What would you say are the avant-garde of comics right now? Those writers and artists that are truly pushing the envelope in the medium.
That's a very good question.
I think John Hickman is one.
I think about this a lot because, you know, a lot of guys that are rewarded for their independent vision, though a very clear independent vision, are sometimes very staid artists. They're very quiet, interpretive, clean line artists, which is an avant-garde, where someone like David Mack, who has not been, I don't think, duly rewarded for his boundary pushing. I know he's one of my best friends, but one of the reasons he's my best friend is because I'm so amazed by him and his work. So I would say David Mack. I would say, as we opened, Jonathan Hickman has done something that it really blew me away, and it's, you know, I'm a jaded son of a bitch, and to be blown away by something is something. Fraction is skating the line there. He's got some really
spectacular
things.
Casanova's awesome.
I don't know if I call it avant-garde, because he's doing it on The Punisher, so it's hard to say.
Oh, okay. I was thinking Casanova, actually.
Well, Casanova, yeah, but he's moving it in a mainstream direction, so that not that you can't be avant-garde in the mainstream. I saw the thread about this, and I saw some names bandied about that I was actually startled were being considered avant-garde to the point where I thought maybe you guys didn't know what the word meant. no offense to Brian Hitch, but...
Yeah, it's... Yeah.
I'm gonna say the one guy who really stuck to his guns is probably David Mack. There's been a lot of guys that started avant-garde and then veered elsewhere.
See,
there's another graphic novel and it's all the way upstairs, or I get it and I can't even think of the name of it that I would consider avant-garde too, but I don't have it. I'll have to type it on the end of the podcast. I saw also a list of a bunch of guys that I don't think got enough credit for. It's just for whatever reason. Like Scott Morris, who's now over at Pixar, but he did some amazing shit going on in his work.
Oh, yeah.
Like, truly. And you know who I would consider avant-garde in the 80s and that I was reminded of how avant-garde he was Matt Wagner.
Absolutely, in the 80s, yes.
And
that was a very...
And he's touching a little of the groove right now.
In the current series.
In the Grendel series,
yeah.
But it reminded me how important his pages were to me and how many ideas he had and how out there he was. No one was touching him.
Mojo Walrus Shitclops, ladies and gentlemen. There's an eye chart of an
name. Too, or Tired of Skrulls, yeah. Okay.
Was William Shakespeare a Skrull?
Yes.
In the last podcast, he claimed that Bionic Woman was the best pilot this season. Now was that pilot a lot different from the piece of crap that that's actually aired? Dude, I would tell you,
I think it was. There was a couple of characters recast, and the sister, Bionic Woman's sister, was deaf in the pilot I saw, which was very unique. It's not something you really see a lot of.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm gonna say I saw something different than you saw.
Will there be a Sharon-type Skrull that goes against her or his mission and helps the good guys in Secret Invasion?
Could be.
I'm really excited for Daredevil, End of Days, and I hope
Sharon-type Skrull?
Yeah, I guess. I'm assuming that's kind of a... That's Sharon Carter, I'm assuming, is a Captain America reference.
Oh, okay.
That's what I'm guessing.
Yeah, I was thinking that too, and then I couldn't think of exactly what he was referencing.
That's what I went with. I'm really excited for Daredevil End of Days, and I hope that it has nothing to do with that terrible Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. But ever since The Dark Knight Returns, superheroes and stories have always covered the same ground with the totalitarian government, the anarchy movements, etc. I know that these aspects do show how much the hero's crime fighting fails in the long term. But a lot of these stories after Dark Knight Returns doesn't seem to add anything to it, and some stories seem to copy it a lot from Dark Knight Returns without that much substance. Will Daredevil End of Days do something different that will break some of the cliches from the superhero swan song?
Yeah, we're gonna break the cliche by completely ripping off Citizen Kane. That's our. I wish I was joking.
Nice, Billy Club.
Yeah.
What's the
what? Billy Club? No, Foggy.
Have you ever seen The Key to Reserva? That short done by Scorsese in the vein of Hitchcock.
I have.
I haven't.
I actually think I have it on DVD here.
When was that done?
Years ago.
Was that like early student film or
early stuff? Yeah.
Okay. Mac 15. Will David Finch return to doing pencils in New Avengers at some point?
I don't think he enjoyed it, to be quite frank. He did some really great work. And
yeah.
I was looking. We got the new hardback that came out. It's really well done, by the way. If anyone wants an oversized version of that stuff, it's really something. But I don't think he dug it. So who knows? We'll work together again one day.
Any hints as to what will go down in the Mighty Avengers annual?
Boobies and vortexes.
Yay! will there be anywhere?
Yeah, you guys remember the Liberty? You know, Liberty Legionnaires or something.
The Liberty Legion, sure.
Avengers.
What they the quality? What they the timely characters that Roy Thomas put together?
No, it was like in like Avengers like 88. It was like Scarlet Witch and Valkyrie and a bunch of people got together and they were like, we're going to go out without the guys. We're the Liberty Legionnaires or something.
Okay.
So we might do something like that. That's my idea for Frank.
Excellent. A massive pillow fight, please. Will there be any more...
Airbrush incident is what the thing is called.
Any more issues of the new Avengers where the Hood and his cronies will take the spotlight for an issue or an entire arc? Will there be more?
Yes.
Let's see. That's all he could think of. Thank you, Mac 15.
Okay.
Homer Gator. Homer Gator, ladies and gentlemen.
Homer Gator.
First question for the both of you. What's your all-time favorite run on a comic?
What's your favorite run, though, Johnny?
Miller and Jansen's Born Again, Daredevil.
Born Again was Masuzelli.
Oh, sorry, Masuzelli. Thank you. Sorry.
You don't even read comics.
Do you? I really don't. No, I don't. No, no. Born Again truly was my favorite story.
It probably was mine too. That and Batman Year One were probably tied, and then Howard Chaykin's American Flag.
Awesome.
And Alan Moore Swamp Thing. I'm a kid of the '80s.
Even Rick Veitch continuing that run. I enjoyed that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Denny O'Neill and Dennis Cowan doing a question. Outstanding. The first, I'd say, 24 issues were incredible.
Yeah, I haven't seen that stuff in a while. I wonder if it holds up.
They're putting it back in print, actually, with everything that's been going on with the question. No, I think it does. I think it was the start of what you and guys like Brubaker and Fraction and Rucka, I don't know if you guys were reading all that when you guys were kids, but it seems
to me. I had them all.
Well, there you go.
I was thinking it.
Yeah, I kind of thought that was the first step towards that kind of storytelling. But that's just me. Here's one for you, Brian. If you could work with these artists on any project, what would it be? Jay Lee.
Stephen King. That looked like a great paycheck.
John
Cassidy. That looked like a home run in the royalty department.
John Cassidy.
Astonishing X-Men.
Boy, nothing but safety. Mike Mignola.
Rocket Raccoon. See, you thought I was going to do Hellboy, but I turned it around on you there.
Yeah, I like the way you did that. Alex Ross.
I wouldn't have minded writing the Avengers thing he's doing, but I wasn't asked.
Ben Templesmith?
I don't know. I haven't really thought about it.
You guys almost did. Would you guys have worked together if you had stayed on Hellspawn?
No, I don't know. It was still Ashley when I was there.
Okay, because I was going to say, I know you guys were kind of like one followed the other.
No, we were near each other. I didn't really know him.
Oh, okay. Well, I know that. You were. He was in Australia.
Fan of Fell, though.
I love Fell. Frank,
I do.
Frank Quietly.
Or Quietly. Not a superhero book. I'm like the only person on the planet that thinks you should be doing sci-fi and not superheroes.
That's cool. Question C for both of us. Do you remember when you realized that you were going to be reading comics for a long time? Was it a single issue, a single moment, or what? For me, it was when you guys, seriously, and I've told you this before, you were one of those writers that brought me back to comics, and I'm like, wow, they're good again, and there's a ton of good product out there. All right, I'm staying in for the long haul. So around 99 or 2000 when everybody was writing good stuff, and still is.
Well, that's very nice. I remember I was on the fence until around the time John said that to me the first time that I said, I'm in.
Did you ever stop?
All my life, I actually said this at the comic club Tuesday night. All my life, I've had comics in my life. I don't remember not having them at all. I don't have no memory with not having comics in them. I remember being four and drawing Spider-Man and showing it to my dad. So it's always been in my life. So who knows?
Because I stopped before college, and then college was during the direct market period for me. So mid-'80s, and that's when I got back in. But then the whole speculation boom really turned me off, so I stayed away for about 4 or 5 years. And, like, Marvel.
That's interesting.
No.
No, it is. Okay. I'm fascinated by it.
Last one, if you have time, for Brian. Mark Bagley, Alex Maleev, or Mike Oeming?
I'm still working with Mark. We're doing a special Ultimate Spider-Man project right now. Alex Maleev, we're working on everything right now, and I'm working with Mike Oeming right now, so I am... It's hard to answer.
You've stumped the panel, Homer Gator.
Yeah, it's been like in 5 years, and none of those guys are talking to me.
He says, good luck on with Secret Invasion. He'll be buying it.
Thank you, sweetie. I've seen inked and colored pages of Secret Invasion, and they're gorgeous.
Excellent.
And yes, there's an inker on the book, too.
I'm looking forward to it. The goddamn Schweitz. Looking back on your run on Daredevil, is there anything you wish you had done differently? What about other books you've been on for a while, like Ultimate Spider-Man? So anything you would have changed?
We took a 6-month break in Daredevil.
I remember it well.
It was. We should have kept going. He needed the time off, and there's nothing we could have done about it. But we were on a momentum.
Yeah.
Sales-wise, too, that we never recovered from. And then they took David's Echo series and put it in Daredevil.
They called it Daredevil. Yeah.
Called it Daredevil when it was an Echo series, and so that served excellent piece of comic book art, no purpose.
No.
And at the same time, confused our readers as well, so I wouldn't have done that. But the stories that came afterwards were our best stories. So, and again, it's not like the book fell off the face of the earth. It's just we kind of had a raging momentum going that it's so hard to get going in any medium, anywhere, that we shouldn't have taking a break.
No, and it was...
You never know.
I understand. It was a 6-month break, and yeah, it was this left turn.
Ultimate Spider-Man... I'm still in it, so I can't think of anything. You know, it's hard to look back when I'm writing... You know, I was writing it today, so it's hard to... I'm still there.
Here's always a good start to a question.
It's a good question when it starts with, I'm not trying to be a perv.
Or a jerk right now. But what makes you decide to include nudity in certain issues? I imagine him breathing heavily as he's typing this. For example, why did Wolverine talk to Spider-Woman in the shower compared to when she had clothes on? What makes you decide so-and-so should be naked here? Which, by the way, I didn't. That was a great and very interesting scene that you don't see normally in a comic book. And I'm not trying to be a jerk or a perv here by saying that, but that was
too late. Well, you're both jerk and pervy. But you know, the truth of the matter is, and I know I know kids read it, going back to the earliest work I did in comics, I got a real soft spot for spy stories.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, in the days of the James Bond. James Bond took off Ursula Andress's bra, uh, her bikini top and strangled her with it.
Yeah.
Wolverine would wait till she was in the shower at her most vulnerable to come at her. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And people are genuinely feel vulnerable when they're nude, as I am right now. So it would be, I just thought, in this scene, what's the best way to do the scene is to do that scene. And I'm sure there's been other scenes like it. I can't think of one right now. I'm sure I stole it from somewhere. But I you look at it from the character's point of view. He wants to get the jump on somebody, especially someone, you know what I mean, who's got chemical pheromones and all that. The best way to do it is then. So that's what that was about. And then there's always that extra layer of, you know what I mean? Because you do get the sense that Jessica and Logan have done it in the past, and it adds layers to the characters as well. And I know nudity makes people uncomfortable. Sex and religion and politics make people uncomfortable. Don't care.
Not me.
I like it.
Me too. What is this?
I thought it was funny that when Black Widow came into that scene to borrow deodorant, everyone assumed Black Widow and Spider-Woman were having an affair. But she came in to borrow deodorant. She's wearing. I didn't even understand that. She didn't have her hands in the coochie. She asked it. She's the ass for doing
zapping herself.
Yeah. Thank you.
Like Kim Powers. I know where you're going. I liked it.
That's a good question. And I saw some reaction to it. And it always startles me, but I kind of always know it's coming because I just know that sex and politics and religion bother people sometimes.
Yeah. What's the status of your Daredevil
work? Not to interrupt you again.
No, please.
It's never done cheaply. It's never going, I got to find some boobies. In fact, you know, most of the time boobs can completely derail a scene. In fact, I just saw Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, the Sidney Lumet film with Philip Seymour Hoffman and Ethan Hawke, which, by the way, you would love, John. Marissa Tomei is nude.
Yay.
For the first half hour of the movie.
Wow.
Spectacularly nude.
That's
very, very naked. Acting naked. We went together to see it. He turns to me and goes, she's been naked for the whole movie. She's not had clothes on.
Wow.
And I was thinking how this is one of the few times where boobies have not gotten in the way of the narrative of the story, and they were spectacular.
That's good to know.
You think back to Julianna Moore's vagina and Shortcuts. I don't remember what that scene was about.
Or that great opening credit scene of Lost in Translation that focused on Scarlett Johansson's ass.
That is not Scarlett Johansson's ass. I actually know that is Sofia Coppola's ass.
Well, she's got a nice ass, too.
There you go.
Where are you and John? When are you and John Romita going to work together on? Oh, I'm sorry, I skipped a question. What is the status on your Daredevil run in the omnibus form?
You know, I didn't ask when I was up there. I just assumed not being a nudge.
Fair enough.
But I know it's underway. So.
Do you have any funny stories from the retreat?
People can hear my voice is a little scratchy. It is in direct relation to the fact that I lost my voice screaming at Jeff Loeb.
Really?
Days straight.
That's awesome.
Oh, we were at each other, and not in a mean way. I mean, when people hear about our fights, they're
creative friction.
Not friends.
No, creative friction.
We are putting a room together specifically because we're coming from two different points of view, and we enjoy it because it's not. If it was every day, one of us would have been dead long ago. But for 3 days, it's exceptional, and we were yelling. It's just 50 people in the room. It's me and him across the room yelling at each other. Like you think the fall of the Russian Empire it's a little like the middle of Reds.
Yeah.
You know. And the highlight of the retreat for me was when Fraxel was sitting next to me one of the days, and I just heard him under his breath go, "Oh my God," like that. And Alan Fine, who's one of the big guys of Marvel.
Okay.
He's like up above Dan and Joe. He's like all of our bosses.
Gotcha.
And he was nearby, and I heard him turn to CB and say, "I had no idea they were this passionate." Which to me felt like that moment in Broadcast News when Holly Hunter was flipping out and the boss goes, "I did not know." And that kind
she
of
was thing. That good, yes.
Well, it wasn't, he didn't say, I don't know if he meant it in a good way. He was just, I think we were, I had to apologize a lot of times for my screaming.
No, but I gather from talking to both you and Jeff that you guys appreciate, you guys almost want to say, listen, this is, I believe in this strongly, but I'm at least willing to hear your view, and if you're right, prove me wrong.
Yeah, no, exactly.
And then that's why, and if anything, I think you're both delighted when the other guy might prove you wrong, Well, it's like, oh, that's cool. All right, I didn't think of that.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
If he can prove me wrong, that means whatever I'm saying 3 months from now, someone online is going to prove me wrong in 2 seconds. You know what I mean? Like someone in Newsarama will blast a hole in whatever fuck I just released in 2 seconds. So, if he's right, he's right. But the argument's got to happen. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And sometimes the argument brings out great stuff from both of us. That's just, you know, or even like 2% better than what we had planned. Even if 2%, it's completely worth blowing your voice out for.
Very cool.
But it really is just like it's like Joe throws two pit bulls in the middle of a room, and you know, and it's always funny how like half the room is always startled that. Of course, we're gonna yell at each other. But we do enjoy it now. You certainly do have the feeling. This started a couple of years ago, and this was related in an issue of Wizard magazine, where he had an idea, and I don't remember what the idea was, but the inherent science of the idea, to me, I felt like a DC. You know how a DC has its own science and Marvel has a science. It's just you know it when you hear it, right?
Okay, I'll take your word for it.
Like DC and the multiverse. You know what I mean?
There's yes.
Ideas that you hear that you go, okay, that's a DC idea. You know?
Okay. Yeah.
So he threw out an idea, and I said, gee, that sounds like a DC idea. And I meant the science of it sounded like a DC science. He turned in his chair and he went, fuck you, like in front of everybody. I didn't mean it like he took it like I just came in the room and said, and I'll come here with your DC idea, you son of a bitch. And that's all he heard.
That's awesome.
And we must have gone at it for an hour and a half that day. I remember like Josh Whedon was between us just hugging himself. And this time it was Alan Heinberg, and every time I looked over to Alan Heinberg, he was just staring at me with his mouth hanging open. Because he shares a studio with
right.
me, I love Alan. We love each other.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
I don't think he'd ever seen us in a room together. So,
well, I know the love.
All this is for the betterment of comics. And again, and we were partying that night. It's a Christmas party. We're totally fine.
That's I was going to say, honestly,
totally.
When Loeb and I are just talking, he always speaks fondly of Venice and says how much he enjoys listening to our conversations. And
no, I'm sure he's thrilled that I brought this all up.
No. No, I think I think Jeff appreciates good debate as well. Yeah, I really do.
No, he does. No, he certainly invites it,
which is good.
Holy Lord! No, but it's funny, like because he's in a writer's room all day, so he's got the muscle for it. Like there's certain
right.
muscle. You use.
Oh yeah, no, you're right. Talk radio's like that.
I'm literally talking to a 5-year-old all day and a woman who genuinely loves me to death. So I don't. There's no yelling in my house, you know. And,
you're not used
so
to it.
I don't have the muscles for it. So literally by day three, I actually felt like I had been in a physical fight. Like I was exhausted. And like I didn't have any like energy for the party, the Christmas party. I just wanted to sit in a room and stare at the wall. I like my alone time. I was very done. And so at the party, he's like, hey! I'm like, how are you? Shut up. Are you not exhausted? I'm exhausted.
Well, we always try and end on a high note, and I think that's a pretty good one. So let's stop there for part one of this end of the season Bendis tapes. Part two coming up very soon, so be sure to stick around and check out Newsarama, iTunes, all the various places you find Word Balloon for part two of the Bendis tapes. This episode of Word Balloon is brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. InStock Trades offers a huge selection of trade paperbacks, hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at up to 35% off, with orders over $50 receiving free shipping. In fact, you can pick up the classic Avengers Disassembled hardcover that was just released in October. The regular price is $24.99. InStock Trades has it for $16.24. And don't forget to visit InStock Trade sister site discount comic book service at dcbservice.com for all your pre-order needs. Major publishers are 40% off and monthly specials are 45 to 75% off. For more details, visit InStockTrades at InStockTrades.com and discount comic book service at dcbservice.com. Word Balloon is also brought to you by The Overman from Image Comics, Scott Reed and Shane White's new story, a 5-issue sci-fi noir story that follows hired killer Nathan Fisher as he fails to stop an apocalyptic union of mankind and machine. His discovery of a cryptic plot to change the face of evolution sends Nathan spiraling down a roller coaster of imminent destruction. Read what Broken Frontier calls a story that promises to be grand in scope. Mark Waid cites, riveting, I couldn't put it down. And Ain't It Cool News says this is truly a memorable and impressive debut series worth checking out. That's The Overman from Image Comics. For more information, check out their website, theovermancomic.com.
Thanks again for listening. This is John Suntress, and don't forget, you can find Word Balloon all over the Internet, like the places I just mentioned. And if, as always, if you have any questions or comments about the show, I can be reached, john@wordballoon.com. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2007.